one. Morning, everybody. Glad that you're here. Before we officially get going, I would like to ask our friends with World AIDS Orphan Day to come up. Hi. You want to tell us before I read the proclamation? Please have a seat.
Yeah, thank you.
You want to talk a little bit about your involvement in this and why it's obviously important to the world?
Sure, but it really is important to the world. I'm Ann Picard. I'm chair of the Portland Area Global AIDS Coalition. And first of all, I want to thank the mayor and the council members for doing this before you do anything else today. This is really great. Yesterday it was Occupy Portland. Today I'm asking you to think globally. I'm speaking on behalf of the 200 local organizations working on issues of HIV/AIDS, global health, and global poverty. They're very diverse in size and the services they provide. They vary from one-person crusades to giants such as Mercy Corps, Cascade AIDS Project, and Medical Teams International, but all are concerned about the needs of children struggling with the impact of AIDS, both directly and in the context of devastating poverty. There are three quick messages I want to share. One, the impact of HIV/AIDS is very different in underdeveloped countries. In spite of all the problems associated with healthcare in the United States, in this country, treatment is generally available. We have very few AIDS orphans and almost no children born with HIV. While the needs of children in Oregon are important, we need to recognize that worldwide, and especially in the countries of sub-Saharan Africa, 34 million children are living with, 3.4 million children are living with HIV. 1,000 children are infected every day. 30 children die every hour from AIDS. Two, the impact on AIDS on children tends to be forgotten. The 16 million AIDS orphans worldwide need basic food and shelter. They need health care, clean water, adequate nutrition. Most of all, they need access to education. And it's much harder to care for children infected with HIV. It's hard to get them diagnosed. It's hard to get them access to treatment. And even if they do access care, the drugs don't work as well in children. Third, and most important of all, 90% of children with HIV are infected by their mothers. Transmission of HIV from mother to child can be prevented by one simple one-time treatment. Just a few years ago, only 10% of pregnant mothers received children. Now it's up to 50%. But that means 50% of HIV-infected mothers are still at risk for passing on this deadly disease to their children. So there's still much to do. We are holding our fifth annual World AIDS Orphans Day event tomorrow, when we'll have nationally recognized speakers and a world market where local organizations will have goods and information on what they're doing and how to get involved. We have the cards available at the desk here. Please join us. It's tomorrow, Thursday, May 3rd, from 6 till 9 p.m. at Mercy Corps headquarters, 45 Southwest Ankeny. Even if you can't be with us tomorrow, thank you again for helping us get out the word and for putting Portland on the map as a place where our politicians care about children around the world who are struggling with the impact of this devastating disease.
Thank you very much, and it's now my privilege to read the following proclamation. Whereas the AIDS pandemic is relentlessly gaining ground worldwide, leaving millions of victims in its wake and orphaning a new child every 15 seconds, and whereas children who have been orphaned or rendered vulnerable by AIDS are among the most fragile children on the planet, and whereas the AIDS orphans crisis is a humanitarian, economic, social, and security challenge that our global society must urgently address, as there are already more than 15 million AIDS orphans in the world, and whereas only a large-scale and sustainable political effort can halt the crisis, and whereas the World AIDS Orphan Day contributes to raising public awareness about the plight of these children whose numbers are constantly increasing, and whereas elected officials have the ability to urge their constituency to respect and protect the rights of vulnerable children, and whereas the moral support given by elected representatives can continue influencing governments into taking immediate pressure for the protection and global caretaking of AIDS orphans, and while respecting and implementing the applicable international rights. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses do hereby proclaim May 7th, 2012, to be World AIDS Orphans Day. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your work, all of you. And I'd now like to recognize Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. May I ask the representatives from the River Rally to please come forward? We have with us today representatives of the Waterkeeper Alliance and the River Network, whose organizations have united to bring us River Rally 2012, which is being held in Portland this weekend. There are over 700 attendees coming from around the globe to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the Clean Water Act, to learn more about river stewardship, to tour their city's watershed restoration projects and innovative stormwater facilities, and of course, experience what is uniquely Portland. Thank you to the Office of Healthy Working Rivers for your work with the local organizing committee, Commissioner Saltzman and Dean Marriott for your assistance with the local tours. It's now my honor to read this proclamation honoring the River Rally participants and their local, regional, and global dedication to restoring and protecting our rivers. But first, I'd just like you to introduce yourselves to say who you are and where you're from.
I am Mbak Yasek, Executive Director of Anne Baykeeper, Dakar, Senegal, in West Africa. I'm the first African waterkeeper.
Welcome to Portland.
Pete Nichols, I'm the Western Regional Director of Waterkeeper Alliance.
Todd Ames, President of River Network.
And Ann Beyer, Director of the Office of Healthy Working Rivers, and we are thrilled to welcome River Rally to Portland, and how appropriate that we're considering the Watershed Management Plan today and all good things that Portland has done to protect our rivers, but what we can learn from others who are protecting rivers around the world.
Thank you indeed for being here today. The proclamation states, whereas the River Rally, an international gathering of the watershed conservation community, convenes in Portland May 4th through May 7th, and whereas the River Rally is organized by the River Network, dedicated to protecting rivers and watersheds, and the Waterkeeper Alliance, a global champion for clean water. And whereas the city of Portland springs from the confluence of the Willamette and Columbia to great continental rivers, and whereas Portlanders take great pride in caring for our watersheds, streams, and rivers, and whereas the recent completion of the Big Pipe Project, Portland's largest public works project ever, is helping return the Willamette to health, and whereas years of work through Portland's Watershed Management Plan, sustainable stormwater programs, Gray to Green, Tabor to the River, Johnson Creek Watershed Restoration, and other efforts are paying off in healthier watersheds and cleaner water. And whereas Portlanders are increasingly claiming their clean water dividend by recreating on and along our rivers in our signature parks, greenways, and trails. And whereas Portlanders and their neighbors have joined together through watershed councils and community groups to do the hands-on work of watershed improvement. And whereas the 40th anniversary of the Clean Water Act reminds us of the important progress we've made in caring for our waters and offers us the opportunity to recommit to the critical work that remains. Now, therefore, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, does hereby proclaim May 4th, 2012, to be River Rally Day in Portland and encourages all residents to observe this day.
I could just add a note on this. We're also very lucky this week that Portland is hosting the National Water Quality Monitoring Conference with over, 1,100 attendees from all over the country here in Portland. And they're going to be, many of them will stay for the River Rally.
All right. Did you have more?
All right.
City Council comes to order. Carla, can you please call the vote?
Roll call.
Sorry. Please call the roll.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. Let's proceed, beginning with communications. Can you please read the title for item number 435?
Request of David Berkson to address council regarding no cuts to Sun pass-through monies, including Buckman. He called and is not able to make it.
Okay.
436. Request of David G. Gwyther to address council regarding police accountability.
Welcome.
My name is David G. Gweither. I'm a candidate for the City Council Position 1. On a police accountability, I have a few thoughts regarding encouraging police officers to live in the city of Portland. It seems as though a number of the problems they've had have been commuting to their various locations outside of the urban area or even within the urban area. But something has come up since I requested this time that I wanted to bring to the council's attention. As we well know, we have a very hotly contested city council position in position one, and it seems as though one of our city one of the city employees has been using city issued garb to advertise for one of the opposition candidates to our current city councilwoman. I don't know if it's in the contract with the fire department or if it's in any city ordinance, but the use of a uniform, i.e. A firefighting outfit, to emphasize the support of one candidate over another seems like a gross misuse of city-issued uniforms. If this stands, I assume we will have police officers advertising for one candidate or another in their outfits. The sewer workers can do it with their trucks or whatever. I mean, it really opens up a Pandora's box. And if we don't have a city ordinance on this, I think we should look into adopting one. Obviously, all city employees should have full free speech rights and should be able to advocate for anybody they want on their own time in civilian outfits. To imply that a city department, and which is implied when you're wearing a uniform, is supporting one candidate over another is outside of what I consider fair campaign tactics. So I hope that the council will address this in the future. Running as what's considered a small candidate, not being able to get on the radio or TV because you're not an incumbent or you haven't raised hundreds of thousands of dollars is one thing, but seeing ads using city-issued equipment is a whole other can of worms. So I hope we'll address this issue before the next election. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Carla, would you please call the next item?
Item 437, request of Deborah Leopold Hutchins to address council regarding North Williams traffic operations and safety project.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to council. We just need your name, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is Deborah Leopold Hutchins, and thank you for the opportunity to come before the city council. 3 minutes isn't a lot of time for me to discuss the details of the North Williams Avenue Traffic Operations Safety Project and the SAC's involvement. You've all received a copy of the background of the SAC's recommendation, and I trust you've all read them and understand how passionate we are about these recommendations. My family moved to Portland, to North Portland, in 1972 from Lehrer Hill Park District, where urban renewal touched many families of Italian, Jewish, German, and Black descent. I purchased my first home in 1984 in North Portland, where I still reside. I raised two children in North Portland who attended Applegate, Ockley Green, and Jefferson High School. I was involved with the parent-teacher advisory committees, and I planted myself at Jefferson High School as a concerned parent. In 2000, I rode in Cycle Oregon, rode and reached the beach, Welch's to Hood River, and other major cycling venues. I was a dragon boat racer for 8 years and went to Italy in 2002 to participate in the World Crew Club Championship. For 8 years, I was a member of a Portland to Coast walking team. And in 2004, I sought out to start an African-American women's cycling group to promote the health benefits of cycling. I'm involved in a local nonprofit organization who works with young girls from the community, and I am the chair of the North Williams Stakeholder Advisory Committee. I'm not sharing these things to impress you, but to demonstrate just how involved I am in the community and the broader Portland community. There are a lot of people just like me who are involved in their community, but are never sought out by the city to help bring about changes in their community. The North Williams Avenue operations project is an example of what the city did wrong and what was eventually done right. This committee started out with 16 members, of which four were people of color and the rest were the Caucasian, and the majority were cyclists. And my time is running out, so I'm going to wrap this up. The long and short of this is that I really want the city to make every effort to take those recommendations that came out of the SAC. Take it to heart. Don't let us down. Do what we are recommended to do. Many of us spent long hours on that committee trying to bring about a change, and those changes have been recommended. If you let us down, you will never probably get the opportunity to have an inclusive group of individuals who are very concerned about their community. I look at you, all of you, and none of you look like me, but you all have a responsibility to represent everybody in this community. And if you fail to do that, then when you ran for that position you're sitting on, you ran for that position out of really not concern for everybody in this community. So please look at those recommendations, take them to heart, recognize that we're serious, and follow through. Find those resources, and I know my time is up. Thank you very much.
Ms. Hutchins, I have a question. Are you satisfied with the recommendations that the reformed SAC came up with?
I am. We all knew that we had to give a little to get a little, and so I am happy. I wish I had a few more minutes and you would understand where my happiness falls, but yes, I would say I'm happy, but I had to give up something to get to where we are today.
And I'd be happy to have a meeting with you in my office at another time to get more information on it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else? Oh, next item.
438.
Sorry. 438. Thank you.
438, request of Galena Carolyn Easterly to address council regarding North Williams Avenue Traffic Operations Safety Project.
Good morning. I'm Galena Carolyn Easterly and a member of the Stakeholders Advisory Council, committee for the Williams Avenue project. I don't have any written comments. I'm just going to speak from my heart. I was part of the second group that was asked to sit on the Stakeholders Advisory Council because there was a big controversy about whether the needs of the community were being addressed. From that came many people of color that were brought onto the committee. And there were a lot of meetings, a lot of time, a lot of our energy was put into that. The recommendations that we have made, some within the confines of what our charge was, some outside those confines, are very important to all of us. Because with that bike lane, there's something so much more valid involved in that than just a bike lane. There was the meeting of people of many different backgrounds and cultures. There was different ages. There were different, there were bicyclists and there were just citizens. And so these things need to be fully recognized and addressed by the council. I hope you do take a look at it. I will add this. What I've learned from this is that you can come into a situation with one state of mind, but when everybody comes together to discuss facts and you listen, then you can eventually come to an agreement, which is sometimes you go along to get along. With the recommendations, you will find that there are other comments that have been made. Two in particular are important to me. There's a lot of building that is happening on Williams Avenue. And some of it we knew about, most of it we did not. And so all of this is going to affect traffic, it's going to affect livability, it's going to affect those bike lanes. So we have three traffic light recommendations that we've made, which are very, very important. I think you'll find that on Williams and Cook, and Vancouver and Cook, these are very dangerous intersections, along with the intersection of Stanton and Williams Avenue. We ask that you pay specific attention to those and to do what you can to help get those things set up. The other thing is the alternate recommendation that I'm very much in favor of, and that is to see about moving the bike lane completely off Williams Avenue. So my time is getting down to the wire. I hope you read these, and if you have any questions, I am available to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Easterly. Really appreciate it. Can you please read the item for 439?
Request of Michelle DePass to address council regarding North Williams Transportation Safety Project.
Hi, welcome.
Hi, thank you. So my name is Michelle DePass, and I appreciate the opportunity to be heard today. I'm going to be addressing today the issues of social equity and housing and where they intersect in the North Williams Avenue corridor. So I studied at Portland State. I have a Bachelor's of Science in Community Development with an emphasis in housing. And my professional background includes energy efficiency work, specifically program evaluation for low-income energy efficiency programs for utilities around the country. I'm a longtime Northeast Portland resident, and I served on the Stakeholder Advisory Committee for the North Williams Transportation Safety Project. On a personal note, I'm passionate about my community, my local community, my hometown of Portland, and for our most vulnerable populations. For a little background, the most significant events of my life have happened within 1,000 feet of North Williams Avenue. My parents emigrated, my father from Panama in the late 40s, my mother from New Orleans in the early 40s. They met, they danced, they married. I was baptized and born within 1,000 feet of that location. My first job at the Black Panther Free Health Clinic was on North Williams Avenue. And I met my spouse, and I'm raising my kids, and I mean, literally the significant events have happened within 1,000 feet of North Williams. So my grandparents on either side never owned a car, and they didn't need a car. From the grocery shopping to the doctor, insurance brokers, to the meat market, dry cleaning, and the post office, they had what we call today a 20-minute neighborhood. It was a thriving African-American neighborhood that that it was thriving. There was no reason to change that. So the city, products and services at that time, at the time I was born, were not accessible to black people downtown or in other areas of the city. And that's significant. I mean, I don't remember that, but my grandparents and my relatives do. But right in our neighborhood, there was a local thriving community, something that we're trying to encourage today, that supported middle-income residents and low-income who created cottage businesses and allowed residents to thrive there. Fast forward 50 years, and we're all familiar with the history and the controversy surrounding the North Williams Transportation Project. And in essence, the controversy stems from the anger and outrage of watching one's community take shape in ways in which we've had very little input. With the North Williams Transportation Safety Project, we've had an opportunity to have that input, and I encourage you to please recognize those recommendations and take them to heart, considering the historical context, considering the type of city that we aim to be and that we want to be, and the greatness that we have in here in this room in terms of everybody that's pulling for that same direction. I've got more, but I've got just 12 seconds left, so I'm going to take it. So the planning and zoning changes that have taken place in the neighborhood historically and continue to take place have resulted in negative outcomes for some of our residents. May I go on? I've got another minute. I would really appreciate the time. I realize we're...
If you could summarize, that would be great.
I'd summarize by saying that we know now that the planning process has not been adequate for some of our residents. We know now that we have the opportunity to make a difference in the way we go forward. We have now an opportunity to recognize the people that have been displaced and to do something about it in the form of affordable housing, which is, I believe, recommendation 12 of our stakeholder advisory committee. I urge you to consider that and consider the residents that have been in this area for a long time and have lost a lot.
Thank you, and thank you all for taking the time during the business day to come down and update us. This issue hasn't formally come back to City Council, but this gives them a sense of the issues and the important concerns that you have, and really appreciate it again coming during the, when we meet regularly during the middle of the business day to let folks know. Appreciate it. All right, that gets us to the consent agenda. Any discussion of any items on the consent agenda? Anyone wants to pull any items from the consent agenda?
I think I have item 465 to refer back to my office.
Can you please read item 465?
465, clarify duties and responsibilities of the Water Bureau Administrator and ratify existing lease agreements.
Unless there are objections, 465 is sent back to the Commissioner's office. Anything else?
And we also
the same with 444.
Can you please read the title for 444?
Reappoint Alan Alexander III to the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission for term to expire May 31, 2015.
Unless there are objections, 444 is sent back to Commissioner Saltzman's office. Anything else? Excuse me.
Pass this down to the mayor, please.
Thank you very much. I'm allergic to budget cuts. Would you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance supplemental budget report, item number 440?
Adopt budget adjustment recommendations and the supplemental budget for the fiscal year 2011-12 spring supplemental budget process and make adjustments in various funds.
Mr. Andrew Scott.
Good morning. I'm Andrew Scott with the Office of Management and Finance Financial Planning Division. With me is Claudio Campuzano, our bump coordinator. The spring bump, as you know, is the time for city bureaus to report on their financial and program performance during the current fiscal year and request any adjustments to their current fiscal year budget. We had a work session regarding this bump in council chambers on April 24th at 9:30 a.m., so I will not go through a lot of details. Just to cover the highlights, though, in terms of the bump, we have about $1.8 million requested by bureaus for carryover into next fiscal year. There is $5.1 million requested from the city's compensation set-aside for personnel costs this year, and there's a net of $12,000 of new request spending, but it actually is there's a little bit of an offset there due to a repayment from some grant funds. So a total net spending out of unrestricted contingency of $512,000 in this bump. There are also a number of non-general fund changes, which are noted in the memo that you all received and was also published online. And we'd be happy to answer any questions about the spring bump.
I'll recognize members of council for amendments. Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. I am proposing an additional $100,000 to fund the Bureau of Planning Sustainability to process very important code changes to our historic design review code. As you may know, we're sort of having civil wars break out in Irvington neighborhood, the Buckman neighborhood, which may potentially become a historic district. We have the Alphabet District in Northwest Portland. And the issue is simply the cost of complying with historic design review. And the Bureau of Development Services has developed proposed code changes that what we believe will not only reduce the cost, but will make more sense out of historic design review and help calm the civil war. What we need is the Bureau of Planning Sustainability to fulfill its role, which is to conduct the public outreach, to actually take our suggestions out for hearings, and then ultimately write the code, present it to the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and make these code changes reality. So I am suggesting we take $100,000 to fund a planning position, a BPS, to process these important historic resource regulation simplifications.
So I'm just curious if you've worked with the commissioner in charge to see if there is a person that already exists that we can asked to assume these responsibilities when I have to pay.
Yeah, no, we've asked. I mean, I raised this question during our budget sessions, and the answer we get from the Bureau of Planning Sustainability, and I've just talked with the mayor, and I think he's okay with this, is you know, if you give us the budget, we'll do it. And I said, as the Bureau of Development Services has before you, there's six suggestions how to simplify the code, make it less costly to applicants, and easier to comply. We just need the Bureau of Planning Sustainability to do the outreach, the code writing, and
And some of the costs associated with this, it's a specialty, and we have to procure outside services. There's also, as you all have been through, there's state-mandated outreach processes required for notification and hearings.
So you're okay with this?
Absolutely. Okay. Sure.
I have a couple questions, if I could. Commissioner Saltzman, this position, if funded, would start when?
Start as soon as possible.
And
I would hope it would start June 1st at the latest.
If an alternative way to approach this would be to have this as part of our budget discussion, since this is $100,000, which will be not available to fund other asks, and having now gone through a week of looking to identify cuts in my bureaus, a very painful exercise, including the potential for cuts in planners, I'm extremely reluctant to add a planner without understanding how this fits within the larger context. If it's your desire to have this position start in June, I wonder whether it wouldn't make more sense to defer on this and have the discussion as part of our budget, since it could be it could start as early as July under our budget process. But I can't support $100,000 given the kinds of cuts I'm facing without understanding within the context of other planning positions which have been targeted for cuts within the budget and trade-offs. As important as this is, I can't take it out of context, respectfully. So I cannot support this request.
And I'm just wondering if, Commissioner Fish, knowing that you potentially have, and this may actually reinforce your position, if you potentially have planning positions you may need to cut, are there any of those people that fill those positions that would be qualified to do this work?
Yeah, and Commissioner Leonard, because the mayor has not released his proposed, because we have not actually specified any particular cut, and that is at his discretion to make the initial recommendation, I can't possibly have that conversation here today. Because we are dealing with such an acute budget shortfall, I don't think it's appropriate to add a position without understanding how it fits in with the others. And I would respectfully ask my friend, Commissioner Saltzman, to defer on this. The mayor's going to announce his proposed within the next day or two or three. I think it's more appropriate for you to have this discussion with him in the context of the overall budget rather than take $100,000 out of context. And it does not go to the merits of the request. I just don't think procedurally this is the way we should do it.
Well, I appreciate the comments, but I guess, with all due respect, we learned last night we're appropriating $75,000 for the Rose Festival, so I don't know, there was no process around that. This issue is, as I said, it's causing civil war in these neighborhoods, and there's a way to avoid this. The Bureau of Planning Sustainability, with all due respect, has not prioritized this. They're all caught up in the comp code or the comp plan rewrite. That's where all the resources in their budget in terms of ads are going. So with all due respect, we need to call the question on this now and get this code changes process. As I said, the Bureau of Development Services, which is on the front line receiving all these complaints, and we've actually held some violations in abeyance of pending a legislative process to make some fixes. We're on the front line. We're the ones taking all the flack. And we need the Bureau of Planning Sustainability to fulfill its role of outreach and taking this to the Planning Commission. So I think it's the time to move is now, and I think this is just as important as an additional $75,000 for the Rose Festival.
So I need to comment on that. I brought the $75,000 forward because it was an oversight from the practice of the council that has existed since I have been the liaison. So we'll discuss the Rose Festival in its own context, based on its own. But I would really like to address this point. But I have to say that we've all been to the public hearings, and there is a lot of community angst over the Sun School program. And I would point out two in particular that struck me that I didn't realize until I started having public hearings: the Fulton Community Center and Buckman Pool, both of which are lesser amounts to keep open than this amount that you've created here. And I appreciate that there is this angst in Irvington and other neighborhoods. But as I pointed out to some of those folks there, it's not that I don't think we should listen to the concerns that they have on the historic review impacts on their neighborhood, but each of those neighborhoods have benefited financially enormously from them being historic neighborhoods. And while they've presented one side, there's definitely another side to counterbalance that. Having said that, I think that the request that you make is fine, but I'm also wondering why you wouldn't ask for the same amount of money for an additional housing inspector to look at housing in neighborhoods that is boarded up from banks that have foreclosed on people who can't afford their homes, who are driving the housing rates down for people who are occupying their houses and making their monthly payments. There are a number of asks that could have been asked for the Bureau of Development Services that I think, frankly, I'd be more apt to support here today than this one. So I appreciate your argument, but I think it does need to be made in the larger context of all of the various cuts that we're talking about, including at BDS.
So I'm going to insert myself as chair. The motion, from what I can tell, does not have three votes, so we can go ahead and have the formal failure, or you can withdraw it, either one.
Well, I appreciate the comments Commissioner Leonard made, and we do have requests pending in the mayor's proposed budget on
and
the housing.
And I support those.
I was simply, and I do take back my remarks about the Rose Festival. I guess there was an oversight, but I didn't know it yesterday when I heard about it. I didn't know it until this morning.
I apologize for
the explanation.
That should not have happened, and that was my fault.
Okay. Well, as I said, to BDS, who's on the front line of this, this is urgent, and we need the Bureau of Planning Sustainability to take this request to engage seriously and not to say we don't have the resources because we're focusing on the comp plan. This is important. And, you know, it's not to say that historic districts' homes aren't increasing in value. What we're trying to say is there's things like, you know, when people change out a window in their backyard that doesn't face the street, do they really have to come to the BDS for and spend $1,000 to get a historic design review? We don't think so. And that's the spirit of the changes we're making.
I agree.
But I will withdraw my amendment and pursue it.
I'll recognize that. I'll move the... And it is a couple of, I take my share of the responsibility as well on the special appropriation, which is supposed to be a re-upped special appropriation. It got lost in translation. So I do move that we add the normal special appropriation of $75,000 to be funded out of the unrestricted general fund contingency. And the other one, so that's one motion.
For the Rose Festival.
For the Rose Festival.
Sorry. Second.
Moved and seconded discussion of that.
We've had several reports about the Rose Festival and the amount of business and economic development that it brings to the city, so I support this motion.
Any other discussion on council on this amendment? Carla, would you please call the vote on the amendment to add $75,000 in unrestricted general fund contingency to the city's Rose Festival special appropriation line item?
Fish?
Not only am I pleased to vote yes, but since Jeff Curtis is here, I want to thank the Rose Festival again for the significant investment they made in the restoration of Tom McCall Waterfront Park, which not only benefits, obviously, the Rose Festival, but benefits the citizens of Portland all year round. So we appreciate the two-way street of this relationship. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
I appreciate those remarks by Commissioner Fish, because the Rose Festival has gone from being an event that people are aware of once a year to being a constant present in our front room. And I think have taken an area of Waterfront Park and invigorated it from what was a derelict, attractive nuisance to a destination point that from which they plan the activities around which Commissioner Fritz correctly points out generates huge amounts of business for Portland, in addition to sustaining a over 100-year tradition of celebrating the Rose in Portland. So thank you, Jeff, and your team. You guys have really done an outstanding job, and I have been pleased to work with you and advocate for you through the years. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thanks to Jeff Curtis and Sue Bundy from the Rose Festival Foundation for being here and for all of your work. I also want to commend your partner organization, the Rosarians, and want to report that I have planted my roses as I promised when I was created a dame. So thank you for the fun of this festival, but perhaps more importantly, the way it brings us together and generates business for us in downtown Portland. Aye.
Adams.
Thank you. Glad we got it in. Sorry for the fumble. Aye. I move that we add $5,000 to the special appropriation for the Police Activities League funded out of the mayor's office budget, running through general fund contingency. So we're adding $5,000 to the general fund contingency from the office of the mayor and using that for PAL summer programming. We also got, I heard a second, thank you. We also got contributions from the Office of Equity and from the Police Bureau, so this allows for a very robust, at $35,000, a very robust summer program. And I would just note that over spring break, we had, given the trends in violence that we are absolutely suffering through during spring break because of the great work of the Portland Police Bureau and their community partners like PAL, we had a relatively violence-free spring break. So using that success, and we fundraised a little more money to make some changes to the programming over spring break, we want to be able to do that all summer. Any discussion with council of this motion? Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to move $5,000 from the mayor's office to the contingency and to allow $5,000 from the contingency to be appropriated to the Police Activities League?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Let's make sure we find a home for the Police Activities League funding ongoing, because it seems to keep coming up, and it's definitely a worthy program. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved.
Mayor, I move the ordinance.
Do I call us into the state law?
I think we just need to have a...
Yeah, I think you have a script there. That
I do. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz.
Mayor Adams has been in this building and has been mayor for 4 years. He hardly needs a script at this moment, Claudio, and I take some offense at that. Mayor, please.
We will make sure not to give him one.
Mayor, that will not happen again. That will not happen again in a public forum. Please, go ahead.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish, for looking
read
out.
Read your statement now.
For looking out.
Voting to read your statement, please.
For looking out for my dignity. According to the Oregon State Budget Law, ORS 294.471, I open a hearing on fiscal year 2011-2012 spring supplemental budget. Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify? I hereby close the hearing on the spring supplemental budget, and I would ask that Carla, there was a second by Commissioner, motion by Commissioner Fish and a second by?
We have an ordinance. It's an ordinance.
Second. Oh, I don't need a, okay.
An emergency ordinance.
Got it. We're calling the question. Please call the vote.
This is on the ordinance. Right?
Correct. Okay. Item number 440.
Fish?
Andrew, thank you to you and your team for once again skillfully guiding us through an especially challenging bump process, and appreciate the collaboration and the clear communication. And I also appreciate the funds which you recommended for programs that I put in for. So thank you. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thanks to the Financial Planning Department for fully answering all of my questions from the work session. I greatly appreciate your diligence. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. All right, supplemental is done. And we're a little behind schedule, but can you please read the title for resolution item number 441?
Reaffirm the city's commitment to watershed health under the Portland Watershed Management Plan.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman. Sorry, I was waiting for them to walk up.
I'm pleased today to introduce this presentation on the Portland Watershed Management Plan to hear about the progress we've made and what's ahead. 2006 doesn't seem all that long ago. In fact, it wasn't that long ago. But when the Watershed Plan was adopted by Council in that year, we were just completing the west side of the Big Pipe Project for the Combined Sewerage Overflow Program, and dreaming of the day when we would meet our 2011 deadline, which we did meet. We had 100, back then we had about 100 Green Street facilities. Now we have almost 1,200 facilities, and they're a regular part of city infrastructure. Garlic mustard, an invasive plant that threatens places like Forest Park and the water quality of our streams, was just getting on our radar. Since then, we've developed a robust early detection program that works with landowners to manage this and other species before they can get well-established in Portland.
Back in 2006, we had 13 species of threatened salmon and steelhead that were listed under the Endangered Species Act with no recovery plans. While additional fish and wildlife have been listed since then, we now have three regional recovery plans adopted by the state, which include many of the city's actions under the Portland Watershed Management Plan. And since 2006, we've learned a lot more about the value of watershed work and green infrastructure in meeting both our regulatory obligations for clean water and for providing many other long-term benefits to the city. We get a lot of bang for our buck. And as Commissioner Fritz acknowledged earlier, it is the 40th anniversary this year of the passage of the Clean Water Act, perhaps the single piece of federal legislation, maybe that and the Clean Air Act, that have dramatically improved the quality of our waters and our air. So with that, I want to turn it over to Dean Marriott, who's going to tell us more about the Watershed Management Program. And I think we have some invited testimony as well.
Thank you very much, Commissioner, members of the Council. Dean Marriott, Environmental Services Director. I'm going to be very brief because I know we're trying to make up a little bit of time. This Watershed Management Plan really has been the guide for the past several years as to how we want to meet as a community our clean water goals. We're here today to talk about the next version of it, really, just which will continue to be the blueprint for going forward. And, of course, as the Commissioner mentioned, there's a variety of ways you can solve these problems. And all around the world, people are wrestling with different approaches. We have really settled on an approach here in Portland that works very well for us. It's a little bit unique. It's the Portland way. It's often referred to nationally when you're talking about clean water as the Portland way. It's proven to be very cost-effective, these kinds of facilities that you're going to hear a little bit about this morning. They do work, and they provide multiple community benefits, so they're very much win-win for our community. I want to thank the Council for your support over the years for the existing Portland Watershed Management Plan and moving forward into the future with the next generation. Without your help and support and guidance, would not nearly be as successful as it has been. A lot of cities are following our lead, asking about how we're doing our work, and we're happy to share that information with them. We still have a ways to go, and that's really what's going to be described in this next plan. I also just want to take a moment to thank my colleagues from other city bureaus and agencies. This is not something that can be done only by Environmental Services. It's done in collaboration with all of the other city agencies working together, and I want to thank my colleagues for their support. And with that, I want to turn it over to Jane Beccari, Watershed Services Director, who will make a brief presentation.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the mayor and members of the City Council for their opportunity to talk to you today about the Portland Watershed Management Plan. I'm actually here on behalf of multiple city bureaus and other community partners who have been involved over the past 6 years in the implementation of this plan. What I'd like to talk about today during my brief remarks is I'd like to provide just a brief background on the Portland Watershed Management Plan. I'd like to give some examples of the progress and the successes that we've had since 2006. I'd like to review some key milestones that we've met and also give a general overview of the work ahead of us, and also I'd like to convey an understanding of why this work continues to be important. And finally, we're going to have an opportunity to hear from some of our city and community partners about this work. In Portland, we believe that healthy watersheds are a solution to many of the urban problems that we face, problems such as stormwater management, water quality, flooding, loss of green spaces, and mitigating the effects of climate change. It's with this understanding that Council adopted the Portland Watershed Management Plan in 2006. We were actually engaged in efforts to improve watershed health well before the plan, but what the plan provided was a focus and momentum for the city to continue this work on behalf of the city and its partners. What the Portland Watershed Management Plan represents is actually a shift in thinking to plan, protect, and restore our natural resources as vital infrastructure. And it establishes a cost-effective and integrated approach that addresses multiple regulatory requirements as well as other community priorities. What the plan does is it establishes high-level, science-based objectives, goals, and strategies for improving watershed health. This watershed approach addresses the sources and causes of environmental challenges rather than focusing just on the symptoms or just responding to individual environmental regulations. And the plan accomplishes this through the identification of six strategies that look at multiple objectives and goals, goals including water quality, hydrology, biological communities, and habitat in the city. So this watershed approach, which is actually the intertwined strategies and objectives of the plan, guide the city's implementation of projects, programs, and policies that address multiple regulatory drivers. So it provides this approach where we get out of our siloed thinking. We don't just come up with individual mandates for environmental requirements, but we actually have an opportunity to realize additional benefits in how we approach our compliance. It also provides the city with some flexibility and the tools to address emerging issues and new regulations as they come about.
I just want to pause on that. If you could just go back to that slide, because I think it's important to emphasize to citizens. Sometimes we hear from those concerned about why we're doing watershed management, and isn't that just fluff? And in fact, it's required. So it's to comply with these mandates that you have listed there.
It is.
As well as because we think it's the
right
thing to do.
We do it because we have to do it.
But we do it well because it's important to do it well.
Yes.
Thank you.
So the plan divides Portland into five primary watersheds, the Willamette, Johnson Creek, the Columbia Slough, Tryon Creek, and Fano Creek. Each of these watersheds actually has some unique challenges and unique conditions, and the plan attempts to address those. Some of these include stormwater management, runoff from streets, culverts, which actually block fish passage and also can contribute to flooding. We've got impervious area from roofs and streets that contribute to some of our stormwater problems, as well as the heat island effect. And we also have invasive species that threaten our urban forests and make them more susceptible to fire and landslides. We think that green solutions are part of the solution. They're part of the watershed approach, and they can provide multiple benefits to the city as well as addressing some of these urban problems. As Dean mentioned, this is a citywide plan, and it's a citywide effort to implement it. While Environmental Services is the lead on much of the implementation, the actions of multiple city bureaus actually directly and indirectly affect the conditions of our watershed, and therefore the successful implementation of this plan is very much dependent on the coordination and collaboration among multiple city bureaus. This slide actually shows a few examples of other bureaus' work for watershed health. We've got invasive species management in Forest Park through the Protect the Best program. We have a Cully Neighborhood Green Street project that PBOT actually led and designed through their street improvements. We have Parks Maintenance, which is actually certified salmon safe in their approaches. And we also have multiple plans that actually provide a foundation for implementation of the Portland Watershed Management Plan. This provides another perspective of the city and why watershed management is important. This is actually a salmon eye view of the city. The map actually depicts where migratory salmon are found in various city tributaries and watersheds. And salmon actually are one of the drivers for this work, but they're certainly not the only one. We have human health, the livability of the city, the services that we provide, and maintaining the investments and capacity that we've built in the city as other reasons for implementation of the plan. A few weeks ago, you actually heard from the Office of Healthy Working Rivers about some of the work that we're partnering with them on in the main stem Willamette. What I'm going to focus on in some upcoming slides are some highlights of the work that we're doing further up in the tributaries and in the watershed. I think one of the important points here is that in order to maintain and protect and enhance watershed health, we can't just be working in the rivers and streams. We actually have to be working further up in the watersheds, too. So as I said, that the city's actually made a lot of progress in implementation of the plan since 2006. One of the things I want to acknowledge is that the City Council deserves a lot of credit for this because they recognize the importance of this approach with their direction to invest resources through the Greater Green Initiative in implementation of the plan and actually provide an opportunity for the city to accelerate implementation of many of the components of this plan. What we've learned through watershed investments are that they work, that they're practical, and they're very cost-effective at times, that they help build community, and they also are good for the economy, and then in many cases, they can leverage additional resources and build partnerships. So one example of how these watershed investments work is the Johnson Creek Floodplain Restoration Project. You've probably heard a bit about this. I hope that you've seen some pictures this winter. These are before pictures. They show flooding in the East Lentz area. The upper left-hand one is flooding Foster Road. Thank you. And the others actually show flooding in some of the neighborhoods adjacent to Foster Road. So last year, we actually completed the first phase of construction that is the work necessary to restore the floodplain and alignment of Johnson Creek in the East Lentz area. And this winter, we already saw some of the results of that work. We're happy to report that some of the major storms that we had in January did not result in flooding of Foster Road. The low two pictures on this slide actually show Johnson Creek flooding, but they show how the restored floodplain is actually providing flood storage, and in that lower right hand, you see a little arrow that shows where Foster Road is, and the floodwaters did not reach Foster Road. So this is actually a great project that also provides economic development opportunities for this part of Portland. The Tabor to the River program is a really good example of why watershed investments are both practical and cost-effective. This is an integrated approach that the cities use to address sewer flooding in basements in southeast Portland. And what we did was we applied both green and gray approaches to the problem. And in doing that, we've ended up saving ratepayers an estimated $63 million over what we would have had to pay if we had just used a gray approach. Some of the tools that we've used in this program is our green streets, which provided infiltration of stormwater. We've also planted trees and done some private stormwater retrofits in the neighborhoods that have actually intercepted and reduced stormwater flows. And then we've also relied very much on the neighbors, some of the businesses and community organizations. These partnerships have really made this program very successful. It's a long-term effort. By the time it's done, we will have installed more than 500 green streets in this area and repaired or replaced over 81,000 feet of pipe. And watershed investments also build community, and they're good for the economy of Portland. The development of green infrastructure in Portland provides employment. It serves as a driver for the creation of new businesses, and it also builds civic capacity. A couple examples of this. One would be the city's eco-roof program. The city has made major efforts to promote eco-roofs in the city through outreach activities. We also provide expertise and support through city staff, and we have an incentive program. In addition to an increase in eco-roof coverage throughout the city, this has also helped create the expansion and creation of businesses and it's supported that support the eco-roof industry in the state and in the region. I think trees are a great example of building both green and civic infrastructure. The city's invested quite a bit in increasing our urban canopy through the Greater Green Initiative. By the end of 2012, we'll have planted over 36,000 trees. The trees are good both for stormwater benefits, they also improve our neighborhoods and provide a more livable Portland for our ratepayers. The investment has also resulted in successful partnerships with the Friends of Trees and with community organizations, and we've had thousands of volunteer hours dedicated to this effort. We've gone a long way with this effort, but we still have a little way to go as far as meeting our 33% canopy goal for the city. And then finally, watershed investments offer the city an opportunity to leverage additional resources and to build partnerships. The Crystal Springs Subwatershed project is a really good example of this. The city's invested $3.8 million in replacement of culverts and habitat restoration in the Crystal Springs Subwatershed. That's resulted in additional funds from partners of $5.1 million. Those include about $500,000 in grants and $4.6 million so far from the Army Corps of Engineers for these projects. So a few of the key milestones that we've met. Since in 2010, we revamped the city's monitoring program for watershed health. The new program is called the Portland Area Watershed Monitoring and Assessment Program, otherwise known, thankfully, as PAWMAP. And this is a scientifically based program, and it's actually consistent with EPA's monitoring protocols.